Once upon a time.
Once upon a time.
Ravishat. Enter. Goshtam. The land of the cowshed. Ashardulaha. A tiger. Nishi. At night. Varshati.
While it was raining.
Shayanaha. Lying down. Gavaha. Cows. Utaya.
Getting up.
Mitaha.
Fearing.
Taha. All of them. Brahmahu. Scattered here and there. Braje. In the land surrounding the cowshed. Translation. Once at night, while it was raining, a tiger entered the land of the cowshed. Upon seeing the tiger, all the cows who were lying down got up in fear and scattered here and there on the land. You can repeat, once at night. While it was raining, a tiger entered the land of the cowshed. Upon seeing the tiger,
all the cows
who were lying down gave up in fear and scattered here and there on the land. So no purport to this text. And let's see, the next text doesn't have purport next after that. Anyway, we'll read till we get to a text with a purport. Text 5-6. A kam jagraha balavan sachu akrosha bayatura tashastu kranditam shutva prishad ho nusasaraha kadgamadaya tarasa pralino du ganenishi ajananachinol bapro shiras shardula shankhya. When the very strong tiger sees the cow screamed in distress and fear. And Prashada, hearing the screaming, immediately followed the sound. He took up his sword, but because the stars were covered by clouds, he mistook the cow for the tiger and mistakenly cut off the cow's head with great force. Text 7. Vyagropi vrakrna shavano nistrimsha rahatastataha nischakrama vrishambito raptam putti samutsrajan. Because the tiger's ear had been cut by the edge of the sword, the tiger was very afraid, and it fled from that place while bleeding on the street. Text 8. Amanyamano hatam vyagram prashradra parabirha adrachit swakat hatam babrum yushtayam nishi dukitaha. In the morning, when Prashadha, who was quite able to subdue his enemies, saw that he had killed the cow, although at night he thought he had killed the tiger, he was very unhappy. So finally, text 9. Tam shashapa kulacharya kritagasam akamatha nakshatra bandhu shudrastvang karmana bhavitamuna. Although Prashadha had committed the sin unknowingly, his family priest Vashishta cursed him, saying, in your next life, you shall not be able to become a kshatriya. Instead, you shall take birth as a shudra because of killing the cow. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki. It appears that Vashishta was not free from tamogun. Wow. The mode of ignorance. As the family priest or spiritual master of Prashadha, Vashishta should have taken Vishrata's offense very lightly, but instead Vashishta cursed him to become a Shudra. It is the duty of a family priest not to curse a disciple, but to give him relief through the performance of some sort of atonement. Vashishta, however, did just the opposite. Therefore, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that he was Durmati. In other words, his intelligence was not very good. Wow. So, Om Ganati Midandasha, Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Unmeditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, as we know, Vashishtha Muni is the Kula Guru for this particular dynasty, the dynasty beginning with Vivatswan and, of course, Vaivaswatamanu and Imam Vivasvate Yogam Bhagavan Mahamavyam Vivaswan Manave Braha Manurikshvakave Pravit. So in this particular dynasty and a cyclic succession, then Vashishtha Muni is the Kula Guru. Now, there's a problem with being a Kula Guru. Kula can also mean place, but in this particular context, it means family or family guru, you know, a particular place. You're a guru of a village, basically. That's why it's called Kula Guru, rather than some word indicating family. So the problem is that you have a tendency to lose some of your Brahminical propensities or Brahminical vision, because as we know from the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the Brahman is supposed to be what? Samadhamakthakchocham shantirajavamevacha gyanaviganam astikyam brahmakarma svabhavacham, peaceful, self-controlled, all these different qualities that we talk about when someone is taking second initiation. So when one is a Kula Guru, one becomes very much dependent upon particular individuals insofar as one's maintenance is concerned. In other words, and not only maintenance, but one also becomes very attached to the place where you are, attached to your residence, attached to the people around you. So it's really not so great for a Brahmin. And there's other examples of this, of a Brahmin actually becoming contaminated because he is a Kula Guru. Of course, the typical example we always use in this regard is Dronacharya. There's the story in the Mahabharata that Dronacharya really wanted to get employed by the Kuru dynasty. And the reason he wanted to get employed by the Kuru dynasty, I mean, it's a little controversial story that Sridhananda Maharaj comments on. His son Ashwatthama didn't have, let's see, the facilities, especially milk. And anyway, I'm not going to get into what Sridhananda Maharaj talks about. But anyway, he says that in any case, he didn't have what he wanted. And so in order to get what he wanted, he had to accept employment. Now, of course, we know when a Brahmin accepts employment, especially when he accepts employment for his Brahminical activities. Employment means salary. It doesn't mean maintenance. There's a difference. We have to be very clear about this. Like Prabhupada actually said in Los Angeles, he prohibited the devotees from giving salaries to the other devotees. Now, maintenance is one thing. Prabhupada did not prohibit maintenance, but, you know, as far as a salary for Brahminical activities, you know, salary for different things, other things is perfectly all right. Like if you're giving a salary to someone to, you know, cut the grass or do something like that, you know, fine. But for Brahminical activities, like for doing deity worship, Prabhupada prohibited that. And because it creates a fruitive mentality, and also one may lose his Brahminical, let's say, judgment. Because when a Brahmin takes a salary, he becomes beholden to the person who's giving him the salary. And one of the aspects, or one of the important aspects of being a Brahmin, is the Brahmin always has to speak the truth, regardless of the personal repercussions, especially the financial repercussions. And, you know, Prabhupada always gives the example of Chanakya Pandit. Chanakya Pandit, even though he was the prime minister, he's a Brahmin, of course, in charge of the, basically the kingdom of Maharaj Chandragupta. But when he had some disagreement because he wasn't getting his salary, he actually lived in like a grass hut or a mud hut, even though he was the most powerful person in the kingdom. So when he disagreed with the king, he was able to just walk away from the situation. I mean, there's more to the story too, how he actually opposed the king later on. But in any case, that's a Brahmin. So with Dronacharya, he was wanting employment. In other words, he wasn't satisfied with what he had. Actually, a lot of the problems in the Mahabharata come about because of Dronacharya's not being satisfied. For example, he approaches his old schoolmate, Drupada. Drupada and he actually went to school together. Drupada was a king, he was a Kshatriya. Dronacharya was a Brahmin, a so-called Brahmin. And he approaches his friend Drupada, and Drupada sort of negates the friendship that they previously had in the Brahmacharya ashram. And he gets very, very angry because Drupada negates that. And also he was approaching Drupada for some material goods too. But anyway, he was approaching Drupada. Drupada rejects him. And one of the things that influenced Dronacharya in the Mahabharata is that he wanted to get revenge. That's also not a brahminical quality, that one wants revenge. He wanted to get revenge from Drupada. And so one of the reasons he started to teach the Pandavas and Kurus was so that he could have them conquer Drupada and he could get his revenge. So you see these brahminical or non-brahminical qualities are coming up when one engages in the service of being a Kula Guru. So, of course, later on, he did become the Kula Guru of the Kurus and Pandavas. And because he was the Kula Guru and maintained by them, he fought on the wrong side of the Battle of Kurukshetra. And not only did he fight on the wrong side of the Battle of Kurukshetra, but he was so attached. This is also another non-brahminical quality. He was so attached to his son that when he heard his son had been killed, which actually he hadn't been killed because that was a trick of Krishna, he put down all of his weapons. So you see, all these attachments were there, and they indicated that he really wasn't a Brahmin. Even though he was born in a brahminical caste, still he wasn't a Brahmin because he had accepted employment, because he had this idea of revenge, and because he even fought. I mean, a Brahmin is not supposed to fight in a battle. A Brahmin can teach, but not supposed to fight. So anyway, so there's a typical example. Of course, Kripacharya was a very similar story. Kripacharya is actually brother-in-law of Dronacharya, because Dronacharya was married to Kripi, who was Kripacharya's sister, actually. And they were actually found. There was a sage who sort of like lost his vital fluid, and they were found together, Kripa and Kripi, in the forest by Maharaj Shantanu. So that's another story. Anyway, so there are stories of Kula Gurus, and here Vasishtha Muni, he's a Kula Guru too. And another problem is the Kula Gurus are very attached to their prestige. You know, I am the guru of this particular family. And as a result of that, when someone is very attached to something, then what happens according to Bhagavad Gita? Jayato Vishapumsa, Sangos Te Shupajayate, Sangat Sanjayate, Kama Krodha Vijayate. In other words, when you have attachment, when you're contemplating, of course, not only contemplating, but you're attached to something, then Sangat sanjayate kama. Then you get filled with the mode of passion, which is kama. And then after kama, kama krodha vijayate. When your desires don't get fulfilled, when you don't get appreciated in the right way, when you don't get food at the right time, something like that, then immediately there's anger. I mean, sometimes there's appropriate anger. We're not denying that a Vaishnava can get angry appropriately at a particular time and even curse, just like you see here Vasishtha is cursing. We have Vaishnavas who curse at appropriate times, but not out of frustration because of contemplating sense objects, but they are cursing for the benefit of the person they're cursing. For example, you have Narada Muni cursing Griva Manala Kuvara. And it's not that Narada Muni was frustrated. Hey, why aren't these people paying me respect? They're just standing there naked in front of me. I'm Narada. You understand? You know, sometimes we may think because we're attached to our particular position, hey, why don't they pay me respect? I mean, just like I was at a Ratha Yatra recently, I was thinking, why don't they let me lead the kirtan? Of course, I didn't get angry or curse anybody. But, you know, this tendency, this false ego thing arises sometimes. So Narada Muni wasn't cursing them for any material purpose. He was cursing them out of compassion to teach them a lesson. And obviously, they did learn a lesson. It was a long lesson, like 100 celestial years. It's a long time, you know. Big punishment, isn't it? But at the end, they actually saw Krishna and became pure devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's appropriate anger when it's out of compassion, when there's some purpose of Krishna's service to fulfill. Another time, even in Lord Chaitanya would curse sometimes people. There's that story of Gopal Chapala. I think some of you heard that story before. Gopal Chapala, he wanted to defame Srivas Thakur. The reason was that Srivas Thakur was holding his nightly kirtans at his house, and Gopal Chapala wasn't allowed in. So he wanted to frame him. Sometimes the police do that too. They plant some drugs in someone's house to frame them. Sting operation. Anyway, so he wanted to frame Srivas Thakur. So in order to frame Srivas Thakur, it's not that he planted marijuana there, but he put the ingredients for worshipping Durga, like vermilion and other things like that. It's interesting. In India, there's certain ingredients that are only meant for worshipping certain demigods. Like there's a flower. What is the name of the flower? Only worshipping Lord Shiva. Does anyone remember what type of flower it is? I don't. Anyway, there's a particular type of flower. It's a red flower.
Hibiscus.
What? Hibiscus. Hibiscus.
Yeah, there's another name in India, but here in the West, it's hibiscus.
Okay, hibiscus. So I remember one time I took this flower, and I was getting ready to offer it to to Giriraj, and the devotee stopped me. No, don't offer it to Giriraj. It's only for Lord Shiva. I said, but it's so beautiful. And they said, no, it's only for Lord Shiva. That's hibiscus flower. So, it's interesting, isn't it? Just so you know, don't offer hibiscus to the deities here.
I think they call it bilva or something.
Bilva, yeah, bilva flower.
Hibiscus here.
It's hibiscus. Thank you for reminding me so I don't do that. So, because I wouldn't do it again. I just won't remember the name, but you know, every time I see it, I remember Lord Shiva. So in India, you have certain ingredients that you only offer to certain demigods. So this Gopal Chapala, he put the ingredients for worshipping Durga, like vermilion and other things like that, by the door of Srivas's house. And so he wanted to make it seem that Srivas wasn't such a good Vaishnava because he was worshipping Durga. You know, he was just hypocritical. So the next morning, Srivas Thakur gets up, opens the door, and he sees all these ingredients there, and, you know, he just sweeps them away or calls for someone to sweep them. And he says, now everybody knows I'm worshiping Durga. You know, a Vaishnava, you know, a pure Vaishnava is not so much interested in his reputation. Of course, he may be interested in his reputation for preaching, but for himself, he just, you know, he doesn't care. You know, sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. So he says, all right, and nobody believes these worshiping Durga. Everybody knows that this is just a frame. He's been framed. So what happens with Gopal Chapala is he contracts leprosy. I mean, that's really what happens if you offend a great, great devotee like Shivastak, where he contracts leprosy. And one of the aspects of leprosy are that worms are crawling in and out of your sores. Nowadays, of course, they have a cure for leprosy. You don't see too many people who have leprosy anymore. They used to have colonies, leper colonies, where to keep them isolated from the general populace, they were on islands and different places like that. In India especially, leprosy was prominent. So he has leprosy. So having leprosy, you know, Lord Chaitanya is there, and he approaches Lord Chaitanya, and he says, Lord Chaitanya, you are the most munificent personality of Godhead. Please save me. And then instead of Lord Chaitanya saying, yes, my dear devotee, I save you, he said, I curse you to be bitten by these worms for many, many, maybe it was millions of births or something like that. So there was Lord Chaitanya cursing, not out of anger, not out of frustration, but he was showing the importance of respecting Vaishnavas. And Gopal Chapala later on was forgiven when he approached Srivas Thakur and begged for forgiveness. So it's not that he was actually going to suffer all those worms for many, many births like that. And sometimes you see that, like a pure devotee will curse, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead will curse. And even there's that story with Prabhupada. There was one devotee who was actually quite offensive. It was in Los Angeles. I'm not going to mention the name. It was actually a conversation. And the devotee asked Prabhupada, you know, what is my service, Prabhupada? And Prabhupada said, your service is to enjoy the material world. You heard that conversation? Your service is, yeah, I mean, that's like a curse. And he said, but you're my spiritual master, Prabhupada. I'm just paraphrasing. And Prabhupada said, you have no spiritual master. Oh my God. So it's not that that was done out of frustration. That was done out of compassion. That somehow or other, it was to shock the person to understand, you know, you're not doing the right thing. You have to correct yourself. So, you know, you have that too, that sometimes pure devotees, sometimes the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they're cursing and they're saying things like that. I mean, even devotees were, and probably were praying that Mr. Nair would die.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada actually said, you know, one becomes very happy when a serpent is killed. So, you know, in certain cases, yes. But it's not like this Kula Guru example here. And it appears, not that I want to criticize Vishishtamuni, that Vishishtamuni definitely has some issues there. That's, of course, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states that. And we'll also read in the Bhagavatam how he did the same thing with Maharaj Nimi. That Maharaj Nimi, this is a story I've told before, but it bears telling again. Maharaj Nimi wanted to do a devotional sacrifice. And he asked his spiritual master, Vishishtamuni, because he's in the same dynasty, obviously. He asked his spiritual master, can we do the sacrifice? And his spiritual master, Vishishtamuni, says, well, I have an appointment with the demigods. And actually, it's mentioned by the Acharyas that he was interested in doing the sacrifice for the demigods because the demigods, I guess, give more dakshin. You know, the acharyas mentioned that in the commentaries. And, you know, it's just like if someone says to me, you know, would you come over to my home? And the person says, will you come over to my home? And I just think, who has more money? Who's going to give a bigger donation? Mm-hmm. Same thing may be there. Of course, hopefully I don't think like that. So anyway, so he says, just wait, my dear disciple, when I come back, you know, you can do the sacrifice, but wait till I come back. So he goes up to the heavenly planets, and as we know, when one's in the heavenly planets, time is experienced differently than the earth planet. And so like a second there is a long time here. You know, like Lord Brahma waited just like an instant and was a whole year on this planet. So it's relative time. So he goes to the heavenly planets. Vasishtha Muni goes to the heavenly planets. Maharaj Nimi is thinking, Durlabham Manasa Janma Tadapthurupam Arthanam. It's a very rare to have this human birth. We shouldn't waste any time. Let me go ahead and do this sankirtan, this devotional sacrifice. All right, so he goes ahead, does the devotional sacrifice, and right in the middle of it, Vasishtha Muni comes back and says, you started it without me. I mean, normally, like a guru comes and finds his disciple has gone on sankirtan without him, I mean, he's probably pretty happy, right? He said, why did you wait for me to go on sankirtan? Well, Gurudev, the people were out there at the festival. So I thought it was all right because you really like to preach. So Vasishtha Muni, instead of thinking, wow, what a nice disciple, so enthusiastic to preach Krishna consciousness or to do this devotional sacrifice, he gets so angry with his disciple, he curses him to die. And this is very similar to this story with Vasishtha Muni cursing Prashatra to become a Shudra. He curses Maharaj Nimi to die, and Maharaj Nimi, of course, responds a little bit differently than we'll read Prashatra responds. Prashatra doesn't say anything to his guru. He just, like, does austerities and becomes a great devotee. But Maharaj Nimi does something that's a little bit different. He counter-curses his guru. He says, actually, the guru's curses, you become nirdeha. Nirdeha means without a body, like deha, dehi, deha is the body, dehi is the person who has the body, like yoga, yogi. So he says, near deha, you die, disciple. And the disciple says, you die, Guru Maharaj, too. So here's a dakshin for you, Gurudev. So they both die, because in those days, you know, curses really acted pretty quickly. So they both died. And Vasishtha Muni, of course, he was later appeared from the summit of Mitra and Varuna. That's another story. And Maharaj Nimi, it was in the middle of the sacrifice, so the brahmanas, after he died, preserved him in a vat of oil. And after the sacrifice, the demigods came, and the demigod said to the brahmanas, what can we do for you, my dear brahmanas? The brahmanas said, please bring Maharaj Nimi back to life because we need a king. We can't exist without a king because a king protects the brahmanas, the old people, you know, the ladies and the children. And so the demigod said, okay. And they bring Maharaj Nimi back to life. And Maharaj Nimi, being a great pure devotee, says, I don't want to be back to life. I want to go back to Godhead. It's a story in the Bhagavatam. I mean, I've told the story several times before. And they say, okay, go back to Godhead, but we need a king. So then the brahmanas take the body of Maharaj Nimi and they churn it or do some genetic engineering. And then what happens is the Janaka the First is born at that particular point. And that's why the city that Sita was born in is called Mithila. It comes from the word Maiti, which means to churn. So he was Janaka the First, and there was Janaka the Second, like King Edward the First, King Edward the Second, and ultimately there was one of the Janakas that was the father of Sita Devi. So anyway, so there's another story of Vasishtha Muni losing it. And not that we want to criticize Vasishtha Muni, he's like infinitely greater than I'll ever be. But still, this is what the Acharyas talk about. So anyway, so the point is, how can we actually become Brahmanas? And what is actually a Brahmana? Of course, a Brahmana undertakes a vow of voluntary poverty. Voluntary poverty means that even though people may give him so many things, he just gives it away. Just like the story, there's so many stories in the Mahabharata about how Brahmanas, they do sacrifices, and then there's offered gold to them, and they just leave it there. And then Arjuna comes later on, and he collects the gold that's been left over for the by the Brahmanas, and he uses this to refurbish the kingdom, which has been decimated because of the battle of Kurukshetra. That's one reason why Arjuna is called Dhananjaya. Dhananjaya means the collector, or the victory collector of wealth. So the Brahmanas have to be really detached. Even though they have something or given something, they generally have to be careful not to accumulate more than necessary in order to maintain their brahminical status. And they need to be detached. And they need to not be concerned with reputation. They need to be concerned with the truth. And so this is, our movement needs Brahmins like that. And of course, we've been speaking before about Varnashram culture, how in the leadership of our movement, leadership in society, you need to break out these different divisions. You need Kshatriyas as managers and leaders, and you need Brahmins as leaders. And the Brahmanas, they advise the Kshatriyas, but they have to ultimately have the control, like we see in the case of Vaina Maharaj. They have the control of deposing a particular Kshatriya when the Kshatriya wasn't doing his duty properly. So you need these two aspects of society to have a peaceful society. Anyway, that's all we have time for. So anyone have any quick questions? 10 seconds? Not even 10 seconds. Okay. Oh. Radharanjani, Hare Krishna. She's in Argentina.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. She's your wife's old friend.